everybody. Welcome to the Buckeye Weekly Podcast. I am Tony Gerdeman, here as always with Tom or Tom. How's it going?
I think you just false started there, so let's back up the podcast 5 yards and try again.
Tom, how's it going?
Delay game on that one. Sorry, back it up 5 yards. Try again.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Buckeye Weekly Podcast. I am Tony Gerdeman, here as always with Tom or Tom. How's it going?
Sorry, it's halftime. You ran out of time. We got to work on your clock management, Tony. This is disgraceful.
I am also doing well, Tom. Thank you for asking. Welcome, everybody, to our second listener questions episode. Again, we asked a couple days ago, and you guys inundated us with questions, which is what can't be complaining, because that's what we wanted. And so we've got plenty of stuff to talk about. I will say on Tuesday and Wednesday, Tuesday we'll get to talk to Ryan Day. Wednesday we'll finally get to talk to some players. We haven't talked to players since the Michigan game, is that correct? And have talked to coaches and talked to Ryan Day on Sunday of the playoff announcement. So that's the last time we got to talk to anybody, but that will eventually be changing here. So just wanted to give you guys a heads up on that. And when that happens, obviously we'll have plenty more to talk about. But for now, we're also doing our Georgia rewatch, although to call them rewatch is not technically accurate. Watching some Georgia games and talking about those. Just finished up recording the Tennessee game, which I'm not even sure which order we're going to be running stuff, Tom, as we talk it out here, as I talk it out to you. But just look for all of that stuff hitting your feed very shortly. But for now, let's talk actually some current events with these questions.
Yeah, and we did Saturday afternoon, we recorded a Buckeyes Tomorrow Morning episode, which touched partly on, you know, Keenan Bailey and his new role with the offense and you know, that we were anticipating, and we had heard that he was going to be the new tight ends coach. And then we hit stop, and then like 5 minutes later, Ohio State, it came out that yes, in fact, he was. So very topical, very timely for us, a little ahead of the news cycle, as we always love to be. So now we're going to talk about some of these questions came in before that, obviously. But they're going to be sort of related to that whole conversation. It's from at TJANG. What are the odds Ryan Day actually hires someone external for the opening coaching spot? The answer is zero, because he hired Keenan Bailey. The consensus seems to be that it will be Hartline, which would be moving up to the OC position. But is that really the best move for an offense that seems to overthink the room at times this season? You know, we have heard there are a couple different ways they could go at that offensive coordinator position. Hartline certainly seems to be the consensus among the people who are talking to people. It seems like Hartline is the one who is maybe the favorite to be there. But, you know, I think, Tony, there's a possibility you could go with a co-OC kind of thing with him and Justin Fry. Because, I mean, there are all sorts of, you know, there are all sorts of titles. The co-OC, assistant offensive coordinator, whatever it is, or offensive coordinator, co-offensive coordinator, the titles are, you know, when you have a head coach who's calling plays, I think the titles are somewhat meaningless. I just wanted to go through the titles right now of Ohio State's, some of the coachings on Ohio State's coaching staff. Ryan Day, head coach. Okay, you know that one. Kevin Wilson, offensive coordinator, tight ends coach. He's obviously leaving. Jim Knowles, defensive coordinator, linebackers coach. Okay. Larry Johnson, associate head coach, defensive line coach. Tony Alford, assistant head coach for offense, run game coordinator. Justin Fry, associate head coach for offense, offensive line coach. Tim Walton, secondary coach. Perry Alano, safeties coach. Brian Hartline, passing game coordinator. Corey Dennis, quarterbacks coach. Parker Fleming, special teams coordinator. And Keenan Bailey was the senior advisor to the head coach last year. Now will be bumped up to tight end. Tony, can you explain, and please feel free to use Twitter's new 4,000 character limit, the difference between the assistant head coach for the offense and the associate head coach for the offense? Can you just sort of enumerate the differences there in terms of responsibilities, obligations, what have you?
Yeah. Tony Alford being the assistant head coach for offense means he assists the head coach. Justin Fry being the associate head coach of the offense means he associates with the head coach. So it doesn't really help him, just shows up in at the same place with them and name drops. That's basically how you associate yourself to a head coach rather than assist them, I think.
it's weird with all these people. They didn't score 70 points a game this year. I don't know. I mean, so many associate and assistant head coaches. And yeah, it's the actual answer here is that the pay for these guys keeps inching up every year. And the way that you justify giving someone is like, well, now instead of just being the running backs coach, he's now the associate head coach for offense. So therefore, Tony, that's more responsibility. So with that title bump and the increased responsibilities, now he also gets a pay raise. And that's why everyone isn't like the seventh Duke of tight ends bill or whatever it is. That's the actual answer for why there's title creep for everyone.
Remember when Urban Meyer made Kerry Combs assistant defensive coordinator, and it's like, that's never been a thing. there's co-defensive coordinator, but assistant defensive coordinator, that's now you're just inventing stuff. And it's probably one of those things where Urban's like, I don't know, assistant defensive coordinator. It's like, oh, that's a great idea. And I think what we may see happen, Justin Fry was an offensive coordinator at UCLA for 3 years. But kind of like being an offensive coordinator under Ryan Day, he's an offensive coordinator under Chip Kelly, offensive guru, head coach, calling plays. So how much really coordinating is it? But again, as we talked about with Kevin Wilson, so much of the coordination is the game week prep. And coordinator doesn't necessarily just mean play caller, especially at Ohio State. But I think I wouldn't be surprised if you have co-coordinators, because Brian Hartline should be named offensive coordinator, never having coordinated, quote unquote coordinated. I think that would rub some people the wrong way, or is he qualified? Also, the same people complaining about it, I'm talking about Buckeye fans complaining about it, would also be complaining if he left to go be the offensive coordinator at Notre Dame or something like that. And it's like, why couldn't you keep him? This is how you have to keep him. But I think a co-coordinator spot between him and Justin Fry would allow Hartline to grow into that role. And I can already hear people saying, well, why does he have to grow into a role at Ohio State? You should be proven. Like, well, promotions happen. But having Justin Fry with that experience there with him, and I think you've got the run game aspect with Fry, the passing game aspect with Hartline. You throw in Ryan Day into that mix and Tony Alford as well. I think maybe that would be the safest way to go of this iteration of coaches.
I think that's the safest way to move forward. I still think there is an argument to be made that it would be good, beneficial to bring in someone from the outside to have just some new ideas in the room more than anything else. I mean, you're bumping Keenan Bailey, and Keenan Bailey is very highly respected, well thought of in that building. But, bumping him up is fine, but that's not an extra person in the room. That's not a new person coming in from outside to say, oh, well, at the old place we did it, where we also had a good offense, here's how we did it, and it's a little different. And I think there probably is a little bit of a benefit to bringing in continuity is great, but outside ideas are also not a bad thing sometimes. So, yeah, I would think that they should think about bringing in someone in from the outside, but that doesn't seem like how that's going to go. So, we'll see. And again, I am much less concerned with who has the offensive coordinator title on the side of the ball that the head coach is, as opposed to when, you had Kerry Combs going and taking over as the defensive coordinator, and the head coach is not the defensive coach. So he really is. He is like the head coach on that side of the ball. Jim Knowles is the head coach on the defensive side of the ball for all intents and purposes. When you had Kerry Combs, who had never been that kind of person before, and Matt Barnes, who had not done it at a particularly high level before, that's when it was a little bit more of a concern. This, if it's Hartline and Fry, it's fine. I would see some benefit to bringing in someone else, but I don't think they're suddenly going to go from, top five offense in the nation to, 40th or something like that. I don't think that's anywhere close to a concern.
And we can continue this conversation with the next question, because I want to address the outside stuff.
Yeah. So next one from Matt Zalexan. I know everyone wants Hartline to be offensive coordinator, me included, but I think this might cause an issue with a more experienced and longer tenured coach like Alford. Could it be that he actually gets the promotion? I doubt there's an outside hire because Day won't stop calling plays.
Promoting a guy like Tony Alford has looked at, has been in the mix at Colorado State to be the head coach of his alma mater. Ultimately didn't get that job. To me, he seems like a guy that he's not clamoring to be offensive coordinator to stay. Like, you may not have to do that to keep him to stay. Now, they have given him additional titles to bump him up in pay as well, and also be additional responsibilities, I'm sure. But I don't see him as the offensive coordinator just because, for one, he's not been a coordinator, and two, there's not this need to do that, or there's not been this, I don't think there's a promise to have that happen. But in terms of bringing in an outside guy, I think we saw the benefit of bringing in Mike Yurcich for a year, and then he left. So that was 2019, and they carried some stuff over from him. They did more under center stuff that they've continued to get into. I think it's a good idea, and I remember I'm pretty sure we said it was a good idea at the time to bring in some outside guys to help and broaden out the offense. But obviously, Yurcich wanted to go somewhere and call plays because there's not a lot that you can do as was he co-offensive coordinator and QB coach? Well, Kevin Wilson was the offensive coordinator. I can't remember if he had that title or not. But obviously came from Oklahoma State where he was making all of the calls, I think, and then gets to do not quite as much at Ohio State, but also got to implement some ideas. And I think you got that with Justin Fry, though, as well. I think people are forgetting that Justin Fry is bringing in some ideas. And I think, Tom, I think he's going to bring in more ideas with Kevin Wilson leaving. I think Kevin Wilson's voice goes away and other voices get lifted up. And now it's up to Ryan Day to hear all of the voices and figure out what's best. And I'm not saying Kevin Wilson was holding the offense back or anything like that. I think it's probably just difficult for Justin Fry to be as boisterous and demonstrative and in control as he wants when you've got Kevin Wilson and Ryan Day, who are both very, very steadfast offensive people in their own right. And it's hard to be, I don't know if he's the third wheel in that or not.
Well, yeah, if you're someone who is the new guy in a room where a couple people have been there forever and you're not necessarily, you know, he's being brought in as the offensive line coach. He's not being brought in as the hotshot new offensive coordinator who's here to, you know, come in and, you know, give you the rah-rah speech and change the world. He's coming in to fix the offensive line. So, yeah, I would think you have, with one of the more veteran voices in that room now moving to Tulsa, I think that makes it more likely that Justin Fry is potentially takes on a bigger role there. And if you look at his results at UCLA, you know, he was an offensive coordinator for 3 years, and then they got better each of the 3 years. So, you know, I'm not ruling out the possibility that he might, you know, have a very positive impact on the line, on the room this year. It's not necessarily a new voice in the room, but it's maybe a voice taking on a bigger role in the room. So maybe that's a positive. But, you know, I mean, Tony Alford is pretty well compensated for his work. And, you know, I mean, I don't think Tony Alford is going to be one of those guys who is the, you know, 30-year running backs coach, like, who was it, Fred Jackson at Michigan, who was just the assistant coach there forever and a day. I would guess Tony Alford at some point will get a shot at a head coaching job. But, you know, I think he's probably comfortable where he is, I don't expect him to go storming out of the room if someone else is named offensive coordinator.
Well, and I also don't think you have to wait long for the Colorado State job to open back up. You know, like it takes like 3 years for it to get lost by somebody. And I would like to see what he can do as a head coach because his players love him, obviously, and it's fun to watch him interact with his guys. And I think he would to see how he would do that over an entire team, I think would be fun to watch. And if he gets to do that at his alma mater, that's great. That's a tough place to play, though. It's a tough place to win.
Yeah, they just hired Jay Norvell away from Nevada a year ago, so he's going to have at least another couple of years. That was kind of a year zero thing. The Steve Adazio hiring was that was a process failure there, and that was Colorado State turning to Urban Meyer for input on that one, and Urban Meyer said, "Hey, you should hire the guy who was my offensive coordinator at Florida." Has he ever been to Colorado? I don't know. But, you know, he's been to Temple and Boston College and Florida. It's like none of those places are anywhere near Colorado. Has he
been successful? Like,
well, was he just fired at the last place for losing? Like, he was just never getting over the hump? Well, maybe. That is a job that feels like they've missed on a couple hires in a row. Mike Bobo was another one where they hired him out of Georgia, and it was like, what does Mike Bobo have to do with Colorado State? Why would you do that? And then he had some health stuff that was not necessarily one that was doomed to failure from the beginning. Steve Adazio was one of those. That was like a Herm Edwards hire. It was like, what? Why? What? So yes, we'll see. We'll see how Jay Norvell does. Jay Norvell was doing reasonably well at Nevada, and that is a program with no resources at all. So Colorado State has more resources. So, you know, they'll give him a couple of years to see how that goes. But yeah, I have been surprised that Tony Alford has not gotten more of a look from Colorado State in the last couple of times.
And before we move on to the next question, which we kind of just answered, but speaking of the state of Colorado, Tom, what about Dion going to Colorado? Now, this is a program that we both think highly of and have fond memories of back in the 90s, early 90s, and it was, you know, it's a great venue. He's already starting to flip some guys and get some four-star commits. I did read one headline. I didn't go into the story because obviously you just see something on Twitter. All you need is a headline. You don't need to actually read the story to get the info saying that Colorado can't actually afford to pay him just yet. But I don't know how long it's going to last, but kudos to Colorado for doing something.
Well, you want to talk about coaching hires that were like, what? Carl Durrell going to Colorado 3 years ago was he was not a good coach at UCLA, which is a program that has better resources, is located in a better part of the country in literally the same conference. And he just was never remotely interesting or competitive there in any significant way in terms of championships. And then you're going to hire him at Colorado years after he's last been a head coach. Like, what, why would you, like, walk me through the process that got you to this decision, because I really would love to understand.
Nobody else wanted it.
Dion is going to be, yeah, well, maybe, but Dion is going to be someone who is, like, I filed this a little under the Lane Kiffin at FAU kind of hire, or Dion at Jackson State. Like, it might go great, it might go terribly, but at least it's going to be interesting, and you're going to have people paying attention to you, and you're going to get it a little bit of an initial splash, and you're going to sell 20,000 extra season tickets, and then we'll see how it goes. And could this end with him in 2 years with Colorado being 10-2 and then Dion going and taking the, I don't know, Oregon job or something? Like, sure, it could. It could also end with Dion getting them on probation and the school cratering and being a complete smoking crater of a program. I mean, like, sure, it could. I'm more inclined to think that it'll be, you know, a 9-win season and then he flips, you know, jumps somewhere else in a couple of years. But, you know, anytime a coach comes in and immediately says, like, my son's going to be the starting quarterback, I kind of go, but this is like, are we sure of all the possible candidates? Are we sure he's immediately going to be the best choice? I mean, maybe he is. I don't know. But that's a little bit of an immediate, like, yes, Dan Hawkins did the same thing. Yeah. Yes.
Okay. All right. That's what I was wondering. I was like, didn't Dan Hawkins do that exact same thing with Cody Hawkins? And
how did that work out?
Transferred out.
Well, yeah. We're out of time.
But I did see where Pac-12 was like, yeah, we're going to hold off on our, we got to renegotiate our TV rights now because we've got Dion. And I mean, the way he walked into, I assume you saw the way he went into the Colorado meeting room, the I'm coming, the whole thing, and saying, you know, go ahead and get into the portal. The fact that he's just being this open with the cameras, that's something that he's always done, but it's an interesting behind the scenes look at how I think some of these conversations go that we aren't always privy to, or coaches try to be a little bit softer while trying to convey the same type of message, because every coach that goes in a new place, they want to get rid of the bad players and bring in the good players. And they go about it in their various ways. Dion went about it in his way. And I think there will be some splashes. There will be some players that jump ship. Notre Dame just lost a running back commit to Colorado. So it will be interesting to see where they go from recruiting rankings, probably, I don't know, before he took the job, 90th. And will it turn into like a top 20 class? That's going to be a tough ask, getting the job with, you know, what, 3 weeks before signing day, the first signing day. So, as you said, interesting nonetheless, though.
Yeah. And I mean, as far as the resources there, I mean, you mentioned the AD actually came out and was asked, do you have the money for this contract yet? He's like, yeah, we're working on it. And I think that's boosters not necessarily believing they were going to get Deion. And then once you get Deion, then you're going to get checks written. But that is not a program that has had a ton of resources. When John Embry was the head coach there, there's a very famous story where he talked about the fact they literally didn't have enough chairs in the offensive line room to have meetings. Like, it just, he had to like go buy water and Gatorade and stuff at the grocery store and bring it in. Like, it was just, that is just a program where it does not operate in the same way that Ohio State or Alabama operates. Now, can Deion, you know, smile and shake hands and kiss babies and you know, parlay that into some extra money, some extra resources for the program? You know, maybe. Probably, but there's, you know, you're digging out of a pretty significant hole as compared to some of the other teams at the top of the sport. So, you know, if he gets them to relevance, if they're back playing in, you know, the Holiday Bowl or something, like, that's perfectly fine. I think they've played two bowl games in 10 years or something like that. I mean, it has been a minute since Colorado football has been really nationally relevant in any kind of significant way. But, you know, if he can do it, good for him. And I think that's one of those, like, shoot your shot and see what happens. Next one from @Zalexan. What offensive coaching / scheme changes are made so that the run game can see some more improvement, or is it as simple as stay healthy?
Well, the staying healthy would be a huge improvement in scheme and results. I think that is not an unimportant note there, because they have not stayed healthy. And as we've talked about, so many times Mayan Williams and Travion Henderson have played in three Big Ten games together, and not entire games together. I think one or two of those got two of those games, either one left. So, like, maybe like one game during the Big Ten season where both of those guys were healthy at the start and at the end. But I do think, as we were saying, Justin Fry having more of a voice, doing more of what he wants to do, you know, some of the more, maybe more of the gap stuff, some more power stuff that he gets to put in there. I think at this point, this is why you brought him over. You want him to get the running game going and get it to be as reliable as you need it, as tough as you need it. You've got to let him do what he wants to do. And I think that will probably be the case. And I know people are upset with the offense and want change. Tom, what are the odds that this bad offense that Ohio State has right now is a blip, is an outlier? And you look at all of the other offenses. Last year they led the nation in yards per carry. Obviously there's still some short yardage issues like there are this year. This year, when they're second in the Big Ten in yards per carry, top five, top 10, like, is it that bad, or is this downturn a blip? Is it something that is, because we keep going back to what they do against the good teams, the great teams, what they do against the great teams is how this offense should be judged. And we'll get another good look at against Georgia. So I guess if you look at it that way, it's not a blip, because it's a several year thing, right?
Right. And I don't know how much of that is specific to the run game versus the pass game. I mean, this year, you know, the game that everyone's judging them based on, they had a converted linebacker who transferred in, who had one carry during the course of the season, as I think their leading rusher in the game. So, you know, I would have liked to see Ohio State play Michigan with a healthy Travion Henderson, or a healthy Mayan Williams, or a healthy Evan Pryor. I don't quite understand the usage of Dallin Hayden in that game. I mean, I think that there's a possibility that this thing is better next year just with health of running backs. I mean, if you're down to your fourth/fifth running back, like, yeah, there's going to be a drop off. If Michigan was playing with CJ Stokes instead of Donovan Edwards, like that game probably looks kind of different. So that's, you know, yeah, they were missing Blake Corum, but they weren't missing their second guy. So that I think is going to be a pretty significant thing. And we'll see how the running game looks against Georgia. That this may be an answer unclear. Ask again later, like ask the Magic 8-Ball. Let's see what the running game looks against Georgia. I'm not expecting the running game to look good against Georgia, but if it does, when Henderson and Williams are potentially healthy again, like, okay, that will be some very useful information moving forward. If it doesn't, well, then we probably need to have a whole separate conversation about this in January once the smoke has settled from all of that.
I feel like at some point we need to do like an over-under show where I just throw some over-unders at you. Because right now I'm thinking like over-under 130 yards rushing for Ohio State. Where are you going?
I'm probably going, without looking at numbers, I'm probably going under. What they rush for against Michigan?
What did they rush for against Michigan, Tom? I can tell you that in one moment. If you just be patient, Tom, I will go ahead and look at CFB stats, and I will go to rushing, and then go to game logs, and I will tell you that they rushed for 143 yards, 4.9 yards per carry.
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm probably going to take an under on that because I think Georgia's rush defense is better than Michigan's. So I'll take the under on that one, but you know, I reserve the right to be pleasantly surprised.
143 against Georgia feels kind of winning, like a winning number, certainly a winnable number. I mean, that to me, because I think I don't see them rushing for that. So if they do, it's like, well, this seems like a successful outing. But obviously, you know, if one of those is a 62 yarder, then you know things are skewed there. But at 130, if they do that, then to me that tells me they're able to move the ball. And doesn't mean they're going to win it, because also they need to be able to stop the ball, which I think is maybe the bigger issue of the two.
Yeah, next one from @Chris_Estes1. Commit day is coming. Update on possible decommits and any surprise commits / flips. Since this came out, cornerback Jermaine Matthews reaffirmed his commitment to Ohio State. So that's one that you can kind of cross off the list. You know, there are certainly concerns, I guess, about cornerback Kyan Lee, who's been talking to Auburn, and Miguel Patrick, who is one of the guys on the staff who was close to him, just left and took a job at USF. So I think that's probably a concern there. You know, they're pursuing safety Caleb Downs, who's currently committed to Alabama, five-star safety. Downs, after winning the state championship in Georgia, said, you know, essentially, like, now we got to do this at Alabama. So you know, that doesn't seem super encouraging, but again, there's a couple weeks left. I mean, is there any other, you know, and then as far as the defensive line goes, Joshua Mickens out of Indiana seems like he is on the likely list. Keon Keeley, it seems like he's on the unlikely list and almost certainly going to Alabama. And then Mateo Uiagalelei and Damon Wilson. Damon Wilson, you know, the national consensus is that he's trending towards Georgia. Locally, people are not quite conceding that one just yet. And then Mateo Uiagalelei might go through to the traditional signing day in February. Is there anyone I'm missing?
I think I saw tight end Jelani Thurman like reaffirm for Ohio State. I know Ohio State coaches have been like doing a bunch of in-home visits with the commits. I saw they were with Calvin Simpson Hunt, cornerback out of Texas recently. There was talk about maybe Deion trying to get Brandon Ennis to visit. So, I don't think anybody expects to lose Brandon Ennis to Colorado, but you know, there is always a decommitment seemingly, but Ohio State has had we should probably go and look and see like how often from between like now and the first signing day is there a decommitment for Ohio State, because it seems like there are some signing day decommitments over the years for them. And I can actually just look real quick here, and
a bunch of them have been cornerbacks or defensive backs. I mean, you had Clark Phillips, you had Jordan Battle, you had Terrence Brooks. I mean,
Terrence
a bunch
Brooks
of them
was the bad one last year or the year before. In 2022, if my internet would hurry up. I could tell you Jaheim Singletary was one. That was in August, though. Terrence Brooks was in December. That was a rough one. Desaun McCall obviously didn't go that late. 2021, they didn't go that late with Chinwese Adelie and Devontae Smith. 2020, while we're doing this, I'll just do this last one, 2020, to see if there's anything in December. Clark Phillips was the big one. Legend Cavazos decommitted and then recommitted. Jake Ray decommitted a year prior. Not that that was a huge miss for Ohio State, but yeah, Clark Phillips, Terrence Brooks, the two December decommits. So maybe look at the quarterback room if there's going to be a decommit, as you said, Tom.
Yeah, something about corners. I don't know what it is, but yeah, that's one to keep an eye on for sure. Last one from Matt Lane McLean: by quote unquote backing into the college football playoff, have the Buckeyes potentially paved the way for the Wolverines' only realistic path to a CFP national championship? Ohio State is likely more suited to dismantle the Bulldogs, admittedly unlikely, and we seem to be a poor matchup for Michigan. Is that their dream scenario? I mean, Michigan getting TCU instead of Ohio State in the first round is unquestionably beneficial to Michigan and a negative to Georgia, and makes it less likely that Michigan would have to play Georgia than in, another scenario. So, yeah, I think unquestionably Ohio State making the playoffs is beneficial to Michigan, because you look at the point spreads and Ohio State is favored by, or is a smaller underdog to Georgia than TCU is to Michigan. That tells me that the committee did not rank the teams in the correct order. So every year it feels like there is one team that gets the favorable first round matchup, and usually it's the number one seed, which is what it's supposed to be. This year, the number two seed got the favorable first round matchup, and it's always a team playing the Big 12 team, which is like, oh, well, look, they're good, but they have some very obvious and pretty exploitable flaws. And I wonder how this is going to play out this time. And has the Big 12 ever won a college football playoff game? I don't think they have, right? Because it's just Oklahoma. Yeah. Yeah. So, and I guess the question is, okay, if it wasn't Ohio State, then who? Is it Alabama? I don't know that Alabama and...
No, they were five.
They were five. Okay. I mean, I don't, if Michigan played Alabama, that would probably be a better game than Michigan TCU, probably. So, but then that means that Michigan would have to play, if TCU was the three, or TCU was the four and is playing Georgia, then that just means Michigan would have to beat Alabama and Georgia, which is a tougher road than having to beat TCU and either Georgia or Ohio State. So, yeah, I think the short answer is yes. This is unquestionably a situation that sets up about as well as it possibly could for Jim Harbaugh in Michigan.
Yeah, and although I will say if USC had made it rather than Ohio State, is that an easier? I think that's maybe an easier matchup for Michigan to go through TCU and potentially USC.
Are we living in a world where USC has a chance to beat Georgia? Because I don't see that as a world that exists.
No, but I mean, that's the world we have to live in if we're going to explore this question fully. And if Alabama gets in before Ohio State, it's Michigan is either playing Georgia or Alabama rather than Georgia or Ohio State. And I think they would probably rather play Georgia or Ohio State. Any opportunity to get Ohio State in there, I feel like, would be what they would choose because of the confidence that they have against them. And now you have Michigan fans, Tom, who, do you think they are going to be rooting like crazy for Ohio State against Georgia? Will they be able to do that? Will they be able to get that ick and deal with rooting like you would not believe for Ohio State? Or do they just would rather not Ohio State even have a shot at the national championship?
That's a really interesting game theory thing there, where, if Georgia wins, then Michigan goes in and, they have a whatever they figure they have a shot at, 40% chance to win the national championship, whatever. But there's a 0% chance that Ohio State wins the national championship. And if they go in and they say, okay, we have a 60% chance to beat Ohio State, but there's a 40% chance that Ohio State wins, and then you never hear the end of it. I think there is a significant portion of the Michigan fan base that is risk averse enough to say, take the worst possible case scenario off the table and just, you know, we'll take our chances with Georgia. And, you know, I honestly couldn't really blame them. I mean, I think an Ohio State Michigan national championship game would be absolutely incredible one way or the other. And just, I mean, the hype around that game would be unlike anything we've ever seen in our lives. But I'm sure there also is a portion of the Ohio State fan base that would be perfectly fine with playing TCU and having a better chance to win. And, you know, again, not having being able to continue to do the 1948 thing and all of that. I mean, that I think is something that you're going to have people with very strong opinions on both sides there. I am all for, like, let's see Ohio State, Michigan for the national championship. That is, you know, Mets Yankees 2000 Subway Series. Like, yeah, as a Mets fan, it didn't go great, but it was still an incredible spectacle. I am all for, like, let's do the most interesting thing. And then, you know, we'll see how it goes on the field.
I guess I'm going to have to throw up a poll on Twitter and just for the Michigan fans to get their thoughts on that one. All right. So then that will do it for us. I want to thank you all for joining us as always. And again, please find us at BuckeyeHuddle.com. Become a member. Say hello to us there on the message board. Talking to Ohio State constantly there, and all sorts of college sports as well. College football going crazy right now, as you might have heard, with the transfer portal, name, image, and likeness, and all kinds of dollars being thrown around at players. So find us there. You can find us at YouTube.com/BuckeyeHuddle as well. If you're watching this, if you want to hit the thumbs up right now, hit the bell to be notified, subscribe to the channel. That way you will be notified when we drop stuff, go live, throw some interviews up there with coaches and players, all sorts of stuff like that. So thank you all for joining us, and we will talk to you guys later.